Powered through the Alaska Airlines Studios.
This is Bump and Stacy
on Seattle Sports Station.
Powered by Kitsap Credit Union. Streaming through the Seattle Sports app and at seattlesports.com.
Now, here are your hosts, Michael Bumpus and Stacy Rost.
Here we go now.
All right, let's take a look ahead to week two. But before that, you guys, I don't like doing this. I have to allow our guests bragging rights for some week one predictions. Robert Turbin, NFL analyst, joining us now on the Emerald Queen Casino Sportsbook Hotline. Turbo, how's it going?
What it do? I see word gets around over there at the radio station. It's all good. That was love.
That's right. I mean, look, you did make a lot of correct predictions in week one, but you know, let's see if you can do it again in week two. That's all I'm saying. I mean, I may have been wrong on a couple of these, but I'm going to try to just, you know, start every week at 1-0. That's how I'm looking at it. So why don't we look ahead to week two? Turbo, Bump and I and Dave Wyman all decided the story of week two between Seattle and San Francisco will be the run game on either side. Do you agree?
Well, yeah, I mean, both teams really based their offenses around the run game. Although we saw Seattle last week, you know, play the game pretty aggressively in the pass game and was actually really efficient in the passing game as well. Not surprised by that. Geno Smith works really hard. But Rashad Penny did break some big runs in that first game against the Denver Broncos. I think you'll see some more against the 49ers. A little bit of question mark for the 49ers in their run game with Elijah Mitchell being out. Hopefully that's something that the Seahawks defense can take advantage of. But without the run game, neither of these offenses can really be successful.
Turbo, this is Curtis filling in for Bump. And speaking of the Seahawks run game, Ken Walker back to practice this week, but there's still some hope that he might play on Sunday. It's looking good. If he does play on Sunday, what kind of workload are you expecting from him?
I'd probably say somewhere between 8 to 10 carries max. I mean, I wouldn't want to give him any more than that as far as carrying the football. You want to, you know, young player, right, still trying to get his feet wet in the game. So I wouldn't put too much on him to start.
Turbo, I know that we're looking at week two, but while we listen to you on the Seahawks pre and especially post talk about Geno, I just want to revisit some of your reactions to Geno's week one. I mean, I was personally surprised. Were you?
No, I was not surprised, Stace. And I mentioned it in our post game show, you know, just being out in Florida, having the opportunity to not only go to Florida and work out with Geno, but being his teammate toward the end of that 2019 season, going into the playoffs and just watching him work, watching him practice and doing, you know, putting in the extra time, although being a backup quarterback, and then just listening to him talk about wanting the opportunity to be in position to be a starter again. And he was open to doing it anywhere. He didn't necessarily think or know it would be Seattle. He just wanted to be able to show his worth. He had the opportunity again, and he's certainly done that. And I'm not surprised by his success because I've literally seen with my own two eyes how he works in the building and how he works outside of the building.
Turbo, you are on some of the best teams of this Seahawks franchise's history, and a lot of the big names from the 2012, 2013, 2014 teams were in the stands on Monday night watching the Seahawks take on the Broncos. What did it mean to you as somebody who was on those teams, seeing a lot of those familiar faces still around the team and still, you know, having you know, a great relationship with this coaching staff and with this front office?
It means a lot because if you go, you know, I've been fortunate to play for some other franchises, and you don't see the same type of love and welcomeness, you know, from every franchise across the NFL. And so it really is an indication of just how great the Seahawks as an organization is, and it's really an indication of the brotherhood that was developed during that time within the players, because, you know, you see them all at the game, but you guys are golfing together nowadays because we're old, and that's what older guys do now. We golf. And some of us who still have some athleticism are still in the gym playing some hoops and things like that. And so that's what makes this relationship so special.
What's something that that helped form so many of those relationships? And obviously, Turbo, the answer might be the guys in the room, and I know that. But it feels like the best versions of any team are guys who, from the outside, believe in each other. They play for each other. They have fun. Now, obviously, you guys worked really, really hard. But I feel like I just want to see that version of the Seahawks again. And do you think they have a chance to get there again as long as they still have Carroll and some young guys?
Oh, yeah, absolutely. I mean, he has the blueprint and the formula to be able to build a championship football team, and it's proven. You know, he's done it before. He's done it at the collegiate level. And, you know, what made our team so special was he had a bunch of guys who, you know, had chips on their shoulders, lower draft picks, or, you know, the way that we maybe our upbringing was, whatever the similarities were, we related in some ways throughout that locker room, young guys, veteran guys, and it just kind of, you know, it just kind of molds together like a peanut butter and jelly sandwich, you know, just like, you know, like that perfect fit. And you know, we went through some hard times together, right? Took some hard losses and things like that together. And, you know, that really builds, the continuity of a football team. And, you know, similarly to the team that you're seeing right now, got a lot of young guys, a lot of lower draft pick guys and, you know, chips on their shoulders, and they want to go out and prove it. And as long as they can find that connectivity amongst one another, not just on the field, but off, they've got a great chance to be champions real soon.
Turbo, looking at this 49ers team that the Seahawks face on Sunday, they come off a game where, looking at the film of it, I mean, with all the weather conditions that they were playing in, do you just kind of throw out what you saw from them in week one and maybe go off of their tape from last season? Or is there anything from week one in their game against the Bears that you can be like, all right, you got to focus in on that? Because as we know, weather is just such the ultimate equalizer in football.
Yeah, you don't throw anything out despite what the conditions were in that football game. And if you watch the 49ers, particularly on offense, they were actually pretty efficient. You know, Trey Lance actually, you know, played a really good game. I know there's always going to be that skepticism of him and Jimmy G throughout the entire season. But, you know, other than the interception where he was kind of locked in on that slant route and the Bears defender just read his eyes the entire time and made a play, you know, he was really good in the pocket, made some plays with his feet. You know, he had a couple of overthrows and things like that. But every quarterback in the league has that in every game. So there's nothing to really be concerned about there. The only thing that you don't want to see, at least me, just watching the game is, yeah, I felt like Trey Lance took too many hits. Mm. You know, he can do some good things with his feet, but he's got to learn how to get down. And then on the other side of it, it was really the penalties in the second half that, you know, blew this game for the 49ers. It looks worse because they lost, right? But they've got to clean some things up from a discipline standpoint because they really shot themselves in the foot, especially in the second half, and the Bears were able to take advantage.
Hey, Turbo, from the point of view of a player, so feel free to get kind of X's and O's if you want. What do you like about how San Francisco runs the ball, and what kind of challenge will Seattle's defense have?
Yeah, no, I mean, listen, they're really consistent at it. They mix things up. I mean, they base their run game off that outside zone. They're really pressing the butt of the tight end and wanting to stretch the defense as much as possible. And really, the goal is to get the running back on the edge, on the outside. But if you're able to play that edge and solidify it as a defender, that's when you see the running backs cut up inside and find those gaps. And offensive coordinators really love to see that as well, because you want to see your backs going north and south most of the time anyway. But then they come back and they mix it up with some gap schemes and pulling guards and running power and counters and things like that. And so it can throw a defense off. And now that you have Trey Lance, who can do a little bit more with his feet as opposed to Jimmy Garoppolo, you're starting to see some more read zone plays. They ran a triple option play against the Chicago Bears last week, and so it makes them a little bit more versatile as it pertains to what they can do in the run game.
Turbo, we got the news this week that Jamal Adams would miss the rest of the season with a torn quad. How will his absence impact what the Seahawks do against the 49ers offense?
Yeah, man, it sucks. It really does. And Jamal, I thought he was going to have a breakout season this year. You know, we talked about it in our pregame show. on Sunday. You know, who's the player that's going to have a breakout year? I thought it was going to be Jamal Adams. And I just felt like his energy, the way he approaches the game, I mean, even before he got injured, you could see the impact and the speed that he and the intensity that he plays with. I was saying that he's really like, you have Jordan Brooks, who's like the leader, the quarterback, and you've got Quandre Diggs, who's like your playmaker and ball hawk. But the heartbeat belongs to Jamal Adams to me. So not having him is going to have a huge impact as far as putting pressure on the quarterback, filling in gaps in the run game. But this team has a lot of competition and pretty good depth. So I predict this defense is going to be just fine.
Hey, getting back to the Jimmy G, Trey Lance conversation, it's kind of a million-dollar question out in San Francisco, but Turbo, is Trey Lance better than Jimmy G?
I think it's too early to determine that at this point of his career. I think he has a higher ceiling.
Yeah.
I think if he's not better than Jimmy G right now, I think he can and he will be, but he's just going to have to, you know, get the repetition and go through those growing pains as a young quarterback. Now, I did say before the season, and I still feel strongly about this, you know, the best chance for the 49ers to win this season, and I mean this season only, and make another deep playoff run, is with Jimmy G over Trey Lance. And I still feel that way. But they're going with Trey Lance, and Trey Lance performed well in week one. He really did. He showed the potential that everybody has, you know, kind of scouted him and sees that he has. And so he's just got to continue to grow. And I think he'll be just fine.
Turbo, George Kittle could potentially miss Sunday's game. What kind of impact do you think he'll have if he doesn't play? What kind of chances do you give the Seahawks if he misses Sunday's game?
Yeah, huge advantage, Seattle, if George Kittle doesn't play. And, you know, everybody looks at George Kittle, at least most people, and they, you know, because of the quarterback conversation, they look at the fact that, man, that's one less weapon that Trey Lance has in the passing game. And that's true. And I'd also, you know, question mark the 49ers as how they use Deebo Samuel, especially in the fourth quarter where, you know, Trey Lance is looking for weaponry out wide at the receiver position, but you have him in the backfield. Another conversation for another day. But George Kittle is also not only key for a weapon for Trey Lance, but he's one of the best run blockers at the tight end position that we have in the league. And we saw some inefficiency in the run game, particularly in the second half for the 49ers. And I think that's where not having George Kittle comes into play as well. He's a great edge setter. You see running backs being able to get around the corner when George Kittle is out there. So they're certainly going to miss him if he's not in the game.
Now, we don't want to have a huge overreaction to week one, obviously. But the rest of the NFC South all lost their respective games. San Francisco to Chicago, Arizona lost, and also the Rams lost that one to Buffalo. Of those three losses, if I do have to overreact to one, is it Arizona, is it San Francisco, or is it LA who might be in the most trouble?
If you have to overreact to
if
one,
you have, if I have to look at it and say, you know what, there might be something to that.
I think it's L.A. Yeah, I think it's L.A. See, before the season, I picked the Seahawks to come in second in the NFC West, make a wild card bid, right? Make the wild card, and I only said second behind the Rams.
Yeah.
Okay. Just because, you know, the Rams on paper, you know, they look really, really good. Now, they didn't have Van Jefferson, one of their starting wide receivers in week one, and they still are missing OBJ, who's recovering from his ACL tear. Now, they're getting Van Jefferson back, I think, this week, and I predict eventually they'll get OBJ back. And that's when I think you'll start to see this offense kind of flow again. You know, it'll probably take till week four or five or six, but they'll get back in rhythm. But if there is one game, because they didn't look very good,
yeah,
that you can over, I don't think much of Arizona. I don't think much of Kyler Murray, Arizona. They're not all that great to me. And you know, who's our other two, the team that I'm missing right now?
We've been talking about San Francisco, so we can take them off the table.
Right.
Yeah.
And San Francisco, and San Francisco with Trey Lance, I'm like, you know, with Jimmy G, it's a different conversation. With Trey Lance, I'm like, we're better than them, in my opinion. So the one to overreact to would be the Rams.
All right. He is Robert Turbin, joins us every single Friday at noon. Turbo, right before we let you go, tell us where we can hear you, where we can see you this weekend.
Yeah, so tonight I'll be on SiriusXM from 4 to 7, Channel 88, NFL Radio, Sunday morning. I'll be on same network, SiriusXM, Channel 88 again, NFL Network from 6 a.m. to 9. Then we'll be doing the broadcast, obviously, on Seahawks Radio right after that. But I'm off. I'm not calling any games. The only game I'm calling this Saturday is my son's 6th birthday party. So
aww.
I'll be I'll be doing backflips at the trampoline park.
Well, that's amazing.
trying not to blow anything, you know. Trying not to blow any knees, you know.
That's the thing. 30 so. Hit hard. 30 hits hard.
Yeah, it is.
All right. He is Robert Turbin. Have a wonderful time at the birthday party this weekend. And you guys will obviously hear Turbo again on the Seahawks pre- and post-game show. Turbo, thanks so much.
Thanks, Turbo.
Take care, y'all.
See ya. All right. Let's get to headline rewrites.
Extra, extra, read all about it.
Headline Rewrites.
Presented by Tila Mortgage.
The real story behind the headlines in today's news with Bump and Stacy.
All right, the Chiefs beat the Chargers on Thursday Night Football thanks in large part to a fourth quarter pick six, and Justin Herbert may miss some time with a rib injury. What's the real headline?
If you ever think the Seahawks find crushing ways to lose, just be glad you're not a Chargers fan.
They know how to take an L.
Yeah, they do.
Better than any franchise.
God.
Yeah, I think I read a stat yesterday that the pick six that Justin Herbert threw in a tie game in the fourth quarter was the first in like a decade that has been the score that broke a late fourth quarter tie. It was unbelievable. You throw a pick six in that situation as you're marching in for a touchdown to take the lead. And then he's playing with like what? Either a cracked rib or bruised ribs.
Something not good. X-rays were negative.
He did not look well.
No.
And yet he was still throwing seeds at the end.
Yeah.
That was impressive.
That guy's crazy strong. Yeah. I'm going to borrow. So Brandon Gustafson earlier in the office when we were kind of show prepping said they're basically like the version of the Seahawks where every game is crazy, but they lose instead of win.
God.
Like the Seahawks have insane games. You'd like that tweet that goes,
and
that's
they
kind
more
of retweeted
than they
every
lose.
Single time. That's like no Seahawks game is normal.
They've never played the same. They've never played a normal game,
which is true.
I think it's Kevin Clark. Who,
yeah. But it's kind of the same with the Chargers. Like they've had crazy moments, crazy games, and they've just always come out on the losing side. And it's weird. You've had so many phenomenal players. You've been in great games, had great moments, and you've just gotten so unlucky.
Yeah, you'd think, or maybe they thought moving from San Diego to LA would change that franchise's fortunes. Nah, man. That stink stays on them no matter where they're at.
Yeah.
The Chargers, they know how to take some losses, and last night, just the latest in a series of them. Normally, it comes down to, like, bad kicking or something.
Yeah.
Something where it's like, really, that's how you lost?
No, this is, like, the first time this has happened ever in the history of the NFL. Once
Jeez.
Again, to the Chargers.
That's why I have a hard time buying them as a Super Bowl team in the AFC.
Yeah.
Because, yes, they have a ton of talent. But that franchise
is cursed.
They trip over themselves more than any other franchise. Justin Herbert in his career, Justin Herbert's a great quarterback. He has a losing record in his career, 16-18 as a starting quarterback. And yet, when you have a quarterback as talented as him, is he just the new Phillip Rivers where everybody can't deny his talent?
Stats, but
yet the Chargers
win.
Can't put a winning team around him?
Man, I hope not. They do have a lot of talent around Herbert, though.
Yeah,
they have great receivers.
Phillip Rivers
have a great
had a lot
defense.
Of talent at times too.
Yeah, but yeah, God, I just can't. I want there to be a world where Justin Herbert and the Chargers do well and do something in the AFC. I don't see it happening this year.
If you thought a Rams Super Bowl party was like sparsely attended, imagine a Chargers Super Bowl parade. There'd be three people.
But again,
there.
That's on ownership for not leaving it in San Diego. Like
yes.
I have friends who are Chargers fans who still hate the Spanos family.
With good
Understandably.
Reason.
With very good reason. Yeah. Next step.
Headline Rewrites.
The Mariners start their final road trip of the regular season with a 4-game series against the hated Angels. What's the real headline?
Can they keep looking like a playoff team against a struggling club?
The Angels have packed it in.
Yeah.
I think the Mariners will feast over this 4-game series. I think they need to win at least 3 to keep pace with the Rays and Blue Jays. Which I believe, do the Rays and Blue Jays continue playing each other?
They have a couple series against each other. I just don't know if it's now, but all of those teams are going to beat up on each other.
Yeah, the Mariners, so the Rays play the Rangers this weekend. That's not good because the Rangers are just as bad as the Angels. Mm-hmm. So you're going to need to make sure that you keep pace with Tampa. And then Toronto, they play the Orioles. So do you root for the Blue Jays in that scenario to keep the Orioles at bay? Or do you root for the Orioles, who are behind you, to beat the Blue Jays so that you can
overtake? Don't you root Orioles? Because ultimately, you'll have the tiebreaker. Would they have the tiebreaker over Baltimore? I don't know.
Well, but
ultimately,
the Mariners would
have a better record.
Put some distance between themselves and Toronto with a win by Baltimore and a win by Seattle tonight. So that would be ideal.
I think I'm just, like, my natural gut reaction is to go with Baltimore. Like, I know that there's arguments you can make, but I just feel like in my mind, I'm like,
well, yeah, because you want the Mariners ultimately to take care of their own business.
Yes.
And if they win, then it doesn't matter what Baltimore does today.
Mm-hmm.
So I think you root for the Rangers against the Rays and the Orioles against the Blue Jays.
Headline rewrites.
And last up, UW finally gets a challenge this Saturday against the number 11 ranked Michigan State. What's the real headline?
We are very ready to enter the AP Top 25.
Typical,
the most self-aggrandizing headline
Husky
I've ever written.
Typical Husky thing. It's their God-given right to be ranked at all times.
Why are we not ranked? We're undefeated.
You won 4 games last year.
Yeah, that's 4 more,
and
3
beaten,
more than Arizona.
You've beaten Kent State and Portland State.
Two phenomenal programs. Neither a state, but two phenomenal
God,
programs.
You beat a team from the MAC and the Big Sky Conference.
Well,
one of those not even a FBS team. They're an FCS team.
You know, hey, Curtis, a game's a game. Any given Saturday. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
I'm just saying.
That's what they say.
Look, all I'm saying is I'm feeling
God
okay about Michigan State. Confident? No. Okay. After watching what Wazoo did, I'm jealous.
Yeah, because they beat a Big Ten team on the road.
Yes.
It would look worse if the Huskies lose to a Big Ten team at home, right? Like, you've got home field advantage. Husky Stadium, right? It's the greatest setting in college football.
God, you're so
salty. That's what they all tell me.
Okay.
Maybe if people would show up to Husky Stadium, it would be a home
field
advantage.
Let's have maybe not someone who ignores every fault of UW and someone else who highlights them discussing this game. Instead, we're going to bring on Mike Varell of the Seattle Times to give us a preview of Washington, Michigan State. Don't go anywhere.
Live from the Alaska Airlines Studio, this is Seattle Sports Station. You're listening to Bump and Stacy,
powered by Kitsap Credit Union.
All right, joining us now on the Emerald Queen Casino Sportsbook Hotline, let's take a closer look at this upcoming game between Washington and number 11 Michigan State. Mike Varell of the Seattle Times joins us. And Mike, I'm going to start with like the not-so-great statistic, which is UW's record against non-conference Power 5 opponents inside Husky Stadium. You have a feature up on the Seattle Times talking about whether UW can make a non-conference statement. Would you mind walking us through some of Washington's history there and what a win would say?
Yeah, I mean, like we mentioned in that story, UW hasn't won a home game against a ranked non-conference opponent since 2001, and that was Michigan. So that's 21 years ago. There are players on this team who were not born 21 years ago. Granted, they haven't played a bunch of those teams at home because it's been hard to get Big Ten opponents and SEC opponents to come to Husky Stadium. So this is kind of a little bit of a rare opportunity, but it's been tough. In that same span, 21 years, they have a total 8-22 record against non-conference Power 5 opponents. And the wins are against Indiana, Syracuse, Nebraska, Illinois, and Rutgers, which is not a murderer's row of talent. So it's a rare opportunity here. It was number 11 Michigan in 2001. It's number 11 Michigan State. Tomorrow, is there some symmetry there? We'll see. But for a program coming off a 4-8 season with a coaching change, trying to really sell to its fan base that it's back, trying to sell nationally, that it's, you know, worthy of a national ranking, that it's worthy of perhaps consideration by the Big Ten Conference. There's a lot on the line in terms of perception in Husky Stadium tomorrow.
One thing the Huskies have going for them tomorrow, Mike, is Michael Penix Jr.'s experience against Michigan State. He started two games against the Spartans in his career, including one against current head coach Mel Tucker of the Spartans back in 2020.
Sparties.
Yeah, well, sure. Yeah, let's go with that. How much of Penix's experience against Michigan State will be to the benefit of Washington on Saturday?
I don't know how much it matters that it's Michigan State specifically, because, you know, it's not exactly the same system. It's not exactly the same players. But I just think it helps to know that this guy has been in those situations. He's played against the Michigan States, the Michigans. He obviously won a very famous overtime game against Penn State. He's beaten ranked teams against Michigan State in 2019. He completed 20 consecutive passes, which was too shy of the Big Ten record. And that was with Kalen DeBoer, who's currently his head coach as his offensive coordinator at Indiana. So I think, you know, especially for a program in UW who hasn't won these kind of games out of conference, it's got to create some confidence just knowing that we've got a guy here who is not fazed by that, is not scared of Michigan State, has had success against Michigan State. It will know how much it matters tomorrow, but I think that's got to create some confidence within that locker room.
Hey, Mike, I have been told by many a critic, including one sitting next to me, Bear Down Curtis, that
always
go Arizona, that I cannot read anything into Washington's start of the season because they have had a really easy schedule against Kent State and Portland State. Is there anything from these two wins when it comes to Washington's team that does feel real?
Sure. I mean, in terms of what you want to read into it, I don't know if you guys remember last season, but they lost their first game last season against Montana, which was an FCS team. So I'm just joking there. But, I mean, there is a bar where, you know, is this team feeling like a Power 5 program and one that can't compete? You can't know at this point how good they are, but we could have known how bad they were. I think that's fair to say. And to be able to, you know, cross those off in terms of dominating Kent State, dominating Portland State, I think that was something that, you know, people nationally needed to see. I think fans needed to see that. There's always a lot of talk with the new coaching staff. Oh, it's different now. The strength and conditioning is different. We're in the best shape of our lives, yada, yada. We have total buy-in. But until you see that, it's hard to gauge it. And obviously, I think we'll get a better idea of how good Washington is tomorrow afternoon. Mm-hmm. But we know that they're not as bad. The floor is not as low as it was a year ago, and that's a pretty good start.
Man, poor Ryan Divish, continuing to catch strays.
Oh, yeah.
From a colleague, too.
Yeah, wow.
It's the people you trust the most.
That's what it is. Yeah.
Mike, the Huskies running back situation, we've seen Wayne Talapapa kind of take the majority of carries over the season's first two games. Do you expect that to continue against Michigan State, or will we see Cameron Davis and Richard Newton get worked in more?
I think it really is a timeshare there, and I think they kind of like it that way. Of course, if one guy gets into a rhythm like Cameron Davis did last week, then you see him start to get a lot more of those carries. But they love Talapapa. They love Cameron Davis. I think they love Davis's versatility, his ability to catch the ball. Will Nixon, the Nebraska transfer, we know that they love his ability to catch the football because he was a wide receiver at Nebraska. And then Richard Newton coming in last week, I think he just brings a little bit different element in terms of how violent, how physical he can be. Even Sam Adams II is available this week and may get a carry or two. But I think there's four guys at least that they feel really, really confident in. It's just a matter of who is impressed throughout the week, who's healthy. And versatility is the biggest thing for this offense. They want you to be able to pass block. They want you to be able to catch the football. They want you to be able to break tackles. If you can do all those things, you're going to obviously earn their favor.
Now, this is like semi-related to that, but as far as the unique challenges Michigan State brings, you mentioned they have their own baggage, but they also bring some really tough play, including on defense. What are some of the challenges and maybe the opportunities for Washington's offense there?
Yeah, I mean, in terms of opportunities, it's the same thing with UW, where it's hard to know what Michigan State is at this point. They've won against Michigan State and Akron, and they've looked pretty good doing it. At the same time, this was the worst pass defense in college football statistically last season. Mm-hmm. Granted, you go against, you know, teams like Ohio State, it's going to look a lot worse. But the numbers are what they are. Going into this season, two games in, it's looked decent so far, but UW will be by far their biggest threat and their biggest test in the passing game. At the same time, Michigan State, through two games that are, you know, arguably deceptive, leads the nation in sacks with 12. And Jacoby Winman, their UNLV linebacker transfer, also leads the nation with 5.5 sacks. So how much of that is real? Michael Penix Jr., who's had a lot of injury issues in the past, has not been sacked through two games for UW. So I think, you know, that battle of UW's offensive line and UW's protection against Michigan State's pass rush might end up going a long way to deciding this game.
Mike, big challenge for the Huskies defensively is going to be stopping this Michigan State ground game. A pair of transfer running backs, Jalen Berger and Jarek Broussard. Broussard, maybe a name familiar to Pac-12 fans who got his early start in college football with Colorado. How do you expect the Huskies to hold up against this Michigan State ground game?
I mean, that really is the question, right? I mean, last year, UW was one of the worst rush defenses in the Pac-12 and also one of the worst in the country. And, you know, that's a team and a unit that really prided itself early in the Chris Peterson era, you know, through those 16, 17, 18 seasons on being one of the better run defenses in the country and in the Pac-12. So they've got some guys who are relatively unproven on that offensive line. You got Tuli Lotulagasanoa, who's a junior who's done a lot of good work, but you got a guy like Ulumu Ale, who's a converted offensive lineman that they want to see more out of, you know, Kwaupe Hopa, Voy Tanufi, Jacob Bandis, Fatui Tuatele. I'm really nailing these pronunciations, but there's a lot of guys rotating through there. And also, I think they feel like their linebacker position is much improved. When you have transfers like Cam Bright from Pittsburgh, they think Alfonso Tupatala, a sophomore, has really risen to the occasion. They got a wave of linebackers. So I think they feel pretty good about where they are, but they've just not faced a test to this point, like a physical Big Ten rushing team and a couple of quality running backs. So we're going to see how much better they are, if they are indeed better, tomorrow afternoon.
All right. And that test, like Mike just said, is going to be tomorrow. Kickoffs at 4:30 p.m. He is Mike Vorell of the Seattle Times, covers the Washington Huskies, has great coverage. So make sure you're following him at Mike Vorell. You can read his work, as you should be doing, at seattletimes.com. Thanks, Mike.
All right. Thanks, friends.
All right. And again, that was a little, did you hear Mike say things, friends?
Wow.
Wow.
That was big.
Oh, that was beautiful.
Thanks, Mike.
It's Bump and Stacey. Someone asked, where's Bump? Bump had to go to the airport for Pac-12 Network stuff down in, where's he going? California.
He's doing Pac-12 Network stuff for the future Big Ten team, UCLA.
And I said, you need to slide as many. No. He's doing their dirty work.
Yeah.
Trying to be professional.
Those of us who remain in the Pac-10.
Yeah, exactly. So Bump is going to be professional. He's going to do his job like the pro that he is. But we have tried to encourage him to say mean things.
He should unleash stink bombs in their facility, just raise hell.
Bump is currently on his way to the airport. Flight to California coming soon. So, Bump, if you're listening, we love you, buddy. Have a safe trip. All right. I'm going to take a look quickly with Curtis around the NFL. Some injury updates for you guys. Shannon and Dre are going to join us at 1, so we're getting right back to baseball after that. And how did I forget this? Niners, Niners, Niners.
Oh, man.
Our weekly trivia game.
How are we going to do it without Bump?
Well, we may have found a way. That's coming your way.
Through the power of technology.
That's coming your way at 1:30 before we get to any of it. Good injury news for a star running back. Bad injury news for a star tight end. Don't go anywhere.
Live from the Alaska Airlines Studio, this is Seattle Sports Station. You're listening to Bump and Stacy.
Powered by Kitsap Credit Union.
All right, taking a look around the NFL, and of course it's Friday, and that means we're going to get a lot of injury updates. So I'm going to start with one that we aren't actually going to find out anytime soon. That was because it was from a Thursday night game. Quarterback Justin Herbert took a hard hit to the ribs in the Chargers' Thursday night loss to the Chiefs. X-rays initially negative, that's according to NFL Network's Ian Rappaport, but he's undergoing additional tests today. Here's the thing. They're taking on the Jags next week, so it's not the toughest opponent if he needs to miss a game. But
it's the whole Russell Wilson missing last year's game,
yeah,
putting Geno Smith out there.
The Jags. And the Jags, it's just the Jags.
I think they put up like 40 on Jacksonville.
It's Jacksonville constantly being like, yeah, let's go. We get the backup and just dominating.
Did you see the video of Trevor Lawrence's pump-up speech before Jacksonville's week one game against Washington? It is
Washington won, by the way.
Yeah, it is one of the least inspiring pump-up speeches. It was basically, he gets everybody huddled up, he puts his fist up, and everybody, you know, puts theirs up too, and he's like, all right, guys, let's play with swag today.
Let's play with swag. Yeah, he didn't even do the speech with swag. It was a swagless speech.
Yeah, it was terrible.
Yeah, no.
I was like, boy, Trevor, you're really going to have to, you know, find something within yourself to get your guys fired
I up. Might be eating my words because he may become the best quarterback ever to play football. I recognize that.
I hope he does.
But that said, he's... I don't know what his personality is like. I have no idea. Like, you were a superstar at Clemson.
His personality is his hair. Yeah, that's all that's people really know about him is he's got long hair.
I don't know.
He's got great hair.
I'm spoiled when it comes to some of the best sports figures that we've been able to watch, whether it's in or outside of Seattle. And I guess I ask for too much.
God, imagine if he had gone to a good team, like instead of Jacksonville.
Well, the thing
having
is that Jacksonville was
Meyer.
Such a mess last year. It was a funny story to talk about as long as you weren't
incredible
there.
Content. Great content. They did it for the cloud.
That's exactly number one rule of the show. Great news for the Steelers. Running back Najee Harris is off the injury report. He has a foot injury. He will play Sunday against the Pats per Tom Pelissero. Meanwhile, Pat's quarterback, Mac Jones, is also expected to play. That was a little more up in the air. So you're going to have Najee Harris. You're going to have Mac Jones. He was removed from the injury report. Jones also today. So
good news on both fronts.
Great news
especially
on both
if
fronts.
You've got those guys on your fantasy team.
It's
going to
be a more competitive game.
Yeah, I'm sure Najee Harris is starting for most fantasy teams out there if you got him, right?
I didn't get him.
You got Justin Herbert, didn't you?
I did. Well, my problem is I was in a snake draft. I had the number 12 pick.
So you had 12 and then the first pick of the second round?
Yeah, so I went.
So you go back to back?
So I got like the worst of the best running backs, but then like one of the
best
top receivers.
Of the remaining?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. Anyways, everyone asked about that just now, so I figured I'd...
Look, I don't mind hearing about other people's fantasy teams. There are people that are like, I don't care.
Yeah.
This is the most stupid thing in the world.
Well, congratulations if you have
so
Najee
many people
Harris.
Play fantasy football,
yeah.
And so many people can like empathize with the craziness of
I
it all.
Feel like half of this segment during the season becomes should you start this guy or not? speaking of, if you have George Kittle at tight end, the answer has become maybe, and that changed in the last 12 minutes with when Cam Inman put out a video on his Twitter account, he covers the team, of George Kittle returning to practice. He has had a groin injury. He was in question as to whether or not he'd play in week two. He didn't return to practice on Wednesday, so there were a lot of signs pointing to him potentially missing Sunday. But he is at least back out at practice today. Now, normally Friday is a walkthrough. It's a light practice, so take that with a grain of salt. But objectively, good news. Obviously, we'll see the final injury report and then find out 90 minutes before kickoff whether or not he'll be playing.
George Kittle against the Seahawks. Up until the game last year in Seattle, December 5th, he had never scored a touchdown against the Seahawks. He then went off, had 181 yards and two touchdowns in that thrilling game that the Seahawks ended up winning.
Yeah.
But, boy, he just has never been able to produce consistently against the Seahawks. I don't know what it is. Maybe Pete Carroll has been able to just find whatever it is that can shut him down, except for last year.
Which is funny because the tight ends used to exploit the Seahawks defense all the time.
Yeah.
Different defense, but they used to have weaknesses there with routes where they just had basically... With the zone defense they were playing, they just became less good.
Yeah.
so you could constantly exploit it.
Jordan Elliott, who writes for Niners Nation, which is the SB Nation blog that covers the 49ers, he tweeted out today that the 49ers in the 15 career games that George Kittle has been inactive for, they're 6-9, which is not nice, in those 15 games. So if he's not going on Sunday, really up in the air. But it sounds like he might be raring to go.
Yeah. All right. Well, the
Darn.
206 on the Mac and Jack's text line says, I was the last in a snake draft, too. Later rounds, I picked up Dak. Luckily, I also got Joe Burrow, though. Well,
yikes.
Let me tell you what. Joe Burrow will be playing in this one, but T. Higgins is questionable to play against the Cowboys. Cowboys will obviously be without Dak Prescott. They'll also be without wide receiver Michael Gallup. Curtis, the Cowboys, the only team in the NFL not to score a touchdown in week one of any kind.
You love to see it.
You love to see
the Cowboys and Cowboys fans suffer.
Now, and Jerry Jones suffers.
Yes.
I'd like
now,
to
I
see.
Hate that it came at the expense of Dak Prescott getting injured.
Sure,
like, no one
likeable.
Wants to see injuries. But when the Cowboys are terrible, the content is even better than when they're good.
Cowboys fans lose their mind.
Yes,
most insufferable
do.
NFL fan bases, top three rank.
Cowboys 1.
Cowboys 1.
Cowboys 2. Cowboys 3.
Absolutely not. No.
Patriots fans.
Patriots at their best, number one.
I don't know. Cowboys at their best, probably number one.
Well, the
I
thing
go
is, Cowboys
Patriots.
Aren't at their best.
Yeah. Third worst. I got to be honest, Broncos fans, they really got under my skin leading up to this week
so
one
game.
So many
of them, which I'm sure
49ers
they would love
fans
to hear,
aren't a great
close.
Group either. I say this as my best man in my wedding. He's a 49ers fan. But he's one of the more rational 49ers fans that I know.
I like the idea. No, he's a good one, though.
He's one of the good ones.
He's one of the good ones.
Broncos fans, though, boy, that is a that's a group I would not mess with.
It's just the only thing that's potentially keeping Patriots fans from being number one is so many of them became Bucks fans overnight. So
yeah, weird how that worked out.
Yeah, so it's keeping them from being number one.
Wonder why that happened.
Getting back to the Mariners, previewing a little bit of this series and obviously talking about some postseason math. With Shannon Dreher, she joins us next.